You've just tuned into Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Welcome back to Beyond Your Past, the podcast that focuses on inspiring you to move forward from what's been holding you back in life. Each week, we talk with clinicians, coaches, mental health advocates, and those who've overcome tremendous odds and now use their journey to encourage you throughout yours. I'm Matt Pappas, certified coach and NLP master practitioner, alongside Joanne Suppressi, author, certified coach, and hypnotherapist. In addition to talking with amazing guests on the show, we share practical tips and insightful strategies that empower and encourage you to break free from anxiety, self-doubt, and the negative mindsets that keep you stuck. This is your place to feel validated and encouraged as you take your life back and live free from your past. Greetings, friend, and welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, we want to pause and thank a couple of incredible organizations. INLP Center, offering world-class online neurolinguistic programming and life coach training to people in over 70 countries. If you've ever considered becoming a coach or simply want more information on their programs, just head over to inlpcenter.org. And to Daily Recovery Support, interactive daily group calls in a safe atmosphere for survivors of complex trauma, equipping you with the skills and information you can use every single day in your healing journey. Learn more about this affordable resource and get signed up at cptsdfoundation.org. And a special thank you to you. We appreciate you listening to the podcast and making us part of your weekly playlist. You all are the reason we do this show, and we wouldn't be here without you. It would really help us out if you consider sharing this episode with one person who might find it helpful. We would definitely appreciate it. Today, we're talking with returning guest Elizabeth Goddard. Liz is a soul transformation therapist and Reiki master teacher specializing in healing from emotional abuse and toxic relationships. Liz joined us back on episode 105, which I'll link in the show notes, and during our chat, we learned more about her work in soul transformation therapy and emotional abuse healing, and today we're taking that topic a step further as she shares some information on her upcoming book, The A to Z of Emotional Abuse. During our chat, Liz gets deeper into exactly what emotional abuse is and how you can recognize if you're in an emotionally abusive relationship. We talk about how cognitive dissonance and gaslighting go hand in hand during toxic relationships and how this can actually damage your brain. We talk about a manufactured soulmate. We discuss what it is and how this can keep us from getting out of the relationship and how the toxic partner uses this to his or her advantage. In addition, we also talk about idealization and devaluation and how your ideals can be used against you by a toxic partner. All this and so much more during our chat with Elizabeth Goddard, starting right now. So, hey, Liz, welcome back to Beyond Your Past. Matt and Joanne here. How are you?
I'm really well. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. It is a pleasure. We had you back on the show, we had you on the show previously talking about your program and your work in general and some of your personal story. And we dove into a little bit of the emotional abuse side, but we didn't get into as much as we wanted to. So we wanted to bring you back and dive into that more specifically in terms of, you know, the book you're writing and some more aspects of what exactly it is and how we can heal from it and being aware of it and red flags and all those types of things. So before we get into that, though, if you want to take a second and say hello again, that would be awesome.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Goddard. I'm a soul transformation therapist, a Reiki master. I work with women, mainly women, recovering from emotional abusive relationships. It's helping them understand what happened. It's all those questions that you come out asking. And also, there's such a void and a pain that comes with it, and believing it's all your fault, and you've done, you know, if only you'd done something, or if you only hadn't done something, if only you said or hadn't said something, and you take it, they take on at this this pain, or you know, the responsibility of this relationship. And it's helping people untangle from these invisible chains that tie them to the relationship, even when it's over.
Yeah, absolutely. So much amazing stuff right there, just in that little intro right there that you gave. So thank you. And for those curious, if you did not hear the first podcast that we did with Liz, that was back episode 105. So I'll put that in the show notes, or you can just check out your favorite podcasting app and search for Elizabeth Goddard, and you will find it, episode 105. So let's jump into more of what you were sharing about emotional abuse, and including the book that you're writing, which is it called The A to Z of Emotional Abuse? Is that right?
Yeah. It's The A to Z of Emotional Abuse, which was a bit of a project, really. More to kick my YouTube channel way back in, I think I might have done it between Christmas and New Year, or the early part of January. And I did a series of Facebook Lives, and then I downloaded those and cut them up and put them onto YouTube. And then I started to wonder, where shall I go with this? And, you know, I started putting them onto Instagram, and I was putting one, I think I was putting one a day, or one, you know, every few days, with a link to the video. And I've already published one book called Finding Lily, and I was due to write another one, which I've sort of written a couple, but it wasn't flowing. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't happening. And I just got a text message from my publisher, and it just made me laugh. And he said, oh, I hope the next book's going to be called A to Z of Emotional Abuse. So it's, yeah. And it was, that fired me up to start writing again. It was, if it was just that ignition that I needed.
So Liz, your book sounds really interesting, and you have experience writing a book, so that probably is helping you with writing this book. So I'm curious, I've never interviewed you before, so I'm curious to know, why are you writing a book about emotional abuse?
Okay, so the first book I wrote, called Finding Lily, fell out. It was so easy to write. It was a story of abuse that happened 20 something years before. And it was me picking all the pieces up and understanding. But what actually I sort of knew, but I didn't know that it was actually happening in my life at that particular point. So I was going through the breakup, or I wrote it as I was going through the breakup, but I didn't know I was going through the discard stage of the relationship. But I did. It's really odd. I knew, but I didn't know. So I didn't know the terminology. And I came out of that relationship and I was like, it was so painful. I've never experienced anything like it that I had when I was sort of 18. But going through and doing the healing and understanding what was going on, it took me down a route that I didn't expect to go down. And I found this terminology, the jargon of, and it would just open my world up. It was just quite... You know, it's a really dark subject. People say, oh, you know, but it actually, for people that are coming out of this type of relationship, they're completely confused, broken, don't understand what's happened. It sort of gives you the closure that you need, that you're never going to get from the abuser. So the A to Z is the jargon, I suppose, the words that you're going to come across as you're trying to understand, or you might come across as you're trying to understand what happened, and an explanation of what they mean. And what I'm writing into it at the moment is, you know, stories behind it, what it might feel like, what it might look like, what it might sound like for each and every one. I've had to then go now and find odd ones, like the X and Z are really hard words to find. So I've had to sort of play around with crazy and a crazy X and crazy. I can't think what Z was now, but crazy is definitely in there. But it was just to help. As much to help with the healing, it's the understanding, and it's that closure that you never, ever are going to get, because the emotional abuse, the abuser actually is still wanting this power and control, and they're never going to hand that back if it doesn't suit them, because they still feel powerful when you're in pain and they have this control over you.
Well, I like the concept and the motivation behind writing the book. And I think this book, it sounds like it's going to be extremely valuable to people because, like you just say, you know, when people come out of these relationships, they are so confused and drained and tired. And a book like this sounds like it helps them come to some realization as to what they're going through, help label things and give them some sense of understanding, right? So, So now it's A to Z. So I'm assuming it's going to be like an alphabetical reference type book, correct?
Yeah, sorry. So the beginning of the beginning of it, there is a story behind it. There is a the story of the there are a few elements that I've kept similar to my first book, and I want to put some healing in there as well at the end. So with Finding Lily, I used a story to sort of explain the universe and then my background. But and with this, I've explained the cycle of abuse separately, and I've explained various different things, and then I've gone into, you know, A is for abusive cycles and B is for belittling and, you know, a betrayal and, you know, so yeah, but there underneath it or within that is information on what it's like and emotionally what it does, and like cognitive dissonance, you know, one of their favorite tools, gaslighting. It's, you know, they're interconnected. They, you know, the same thing, but it's, and the damage they do, you know, cognitive dissonance is so, so damaging to the brain. It really is damaging to the brain. So it's wrapping it up so you can, you know, read through it and understand maybe on different levels. You've got the A to Z, so you could look up, you know, M and see what's, you know, in their manipulation and manufactured relationships or whatever it is. But also find out what that is like and have an understanding of what that feels like in a relationship or what it appears like in a relationship.
Something you mentioned, I think, is very, very key, and maybe not something that everybody understands in terms of the actual term, but I would imagine that once you explain it a bit more, people will, you know, those who are not familiar with cognitive dissonance, I think maybe explaining that a little bit more and going down the road of how that ties into emotional abuse and gaslighting, I think would be good, because again, it's not something where you always know the term, but once somebody explains it, you're like, oh yeah, I know what that's like, right?
Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do with the book. So cognitive dissonance is holding two different thought patterns around the same situation. And when I was trying to get examples, all I could come up with or all I could find were things like somebody who smokes that knows it's bad for them, or, you know, but cognitive dissonance is in a relationship, it is believing or being told by the person you believe loves you and is your protector. So there's so many different layers around this, and how. Also try in the book to explain how they do it as well. So cognitive dissonance is they put themselves in a place of protector. So they've maneuvered themselves in. You go to them for your survival needs to be met. You see them as your protector or whatever role. And it's something that happens in when a baby's born. You know, it's that type of relationship, that bonding that happens. So with the cognitive dissonance, what they're doing is they're actually trying to make you believe you're crazy. And they're giving you, so it might be that you believe they're telling you how much they love you, and yet their words and actions don't match the words. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It makes total sense. I mean, you're talking about emotional abuse and also, of course, gaslighting is a big term, as is cognitive dissonance in the realm of narcissistic abuse and just pretty much toxic people in general. So yeah, I think it's just whenever you can kind of break it down into how it relates to a particular topic, in this case emotional abuse, I think it's really helpful.
Yeah. So with this cognitive dissonance, you're tricking, you know, part of your brain is saying, well, hang on a minute, this person loves me and they care for me and they tell me this and whatever, but the action behind it is that I don't feel loved. I don't feel supported. I don't feel whatever it is that, you know, you're not getting your needs met within that relationship. And the gaslighting, the term gaslighting comes from films. Oh, I think it's Hitchcock. I can't remember now. Two of them were made in 1940 and 1944. And I've watched parts of both of them, if that makes sense. I think I started watching the second one and thinking, well, this doesn't quite match up with the first one that I've got my head around. And as a young woman who goes off traveling to Europe, her parents were killed and she's brought up by an aunt, and she meets someone who's a piano tuner and she's learning to play the piano. And I'm going to say Italy. I don't know. I think it is Italy. Anyway, they fall in love, or he manufactures this relationship with her. She believes he loves her. They come back to England. They inherit the aunt's house and there's money and jewels. And he systematically, over a period of time, changes her perception of what's going on and makes her believe she's going crazy. I think she leaves the room thinking she's turned the light off. And when she comes back in, it's on. But he doesn't just do it to her. He also does it to the people surrounding her. So he's putting himself in this place of, look at me, I'm looking after her and I'm here to protect her. But actually, he's abusing her in behind the scenes, covertly abusing her. And it's changing the reality, changing your perception of reality. And it confuses the brain. The brain just cannot compute what's going on. And that's why it's so dangerous. It really, really is a dangerous, dangerous tool. So gaslighting comes from the film Gaslight, which is this, the woman leaving, coming in and out of this room thinking or believing she's done something. The second one, I can't remember whether I saw the 1940s one recently or the 44. There was a picture that kept going missing and the husband kept convincing his wife that she'd hidden the picture, and she'd go to the place where they found it and say, I don't understand it. I just don't remember doing it. It's because she didn't do it. You know, he was tricking her. And it's, we've got this built-in intuition that we're born with, which is centuries, you know, old. And it tells us what's right and wrong. It's the gut that we turn off because they tell us that we're too sensitive or we've misread a situation or they didn't mean it. They were only joking, as they're chopping away at the boundaries around you that you've got, you know, sort of good boundaries and they hack away at them. And they make you believe you are going crazy and you're not, they're the crazy ones. It's really dangerous. It's really, it's not, it's not healthy at all. They really, really manipulate the situations to do that. So.
Yeah, these are really great examples that you're giving about these two terms. These are excellent examples. So, you know, I'm curious to know, are you going to include like stories like this and examples like this in your book? Are they going to be?
I'm trying to. I'm working on it at the moment. So I got the text message a week or so ago. I spoke to my publisher maybe a week ago. I think it might be a week today. I spoke to him. And so I started, I've got articles that I've written. So I'm taking bits of articles and, you know, I've got the A to Z that I'd written to go with the Instagram and Instagram posts. And so I've pulled them all together and then I'm writing stories around it as well. So it's to give people examples because they don't all have the same pattern. There is a pattern. There's this cycle of abuse, which is the love bombing, the idealization stage, the devaluation stage, and the discard stage. So they have that. They all do that. They just have different techniques that they like.
Because people need something to relate to. And, you know, the stories you just said, I think so many people can relate to them, especially people who've been through emotional abuse. You know, so many of them have experienced gaslighting, you know, and then you share a story like that in your book, they'll be like, wow, that's what I went through.
So yeah, I think it's coming out of the relationship and trying to understand what happened, because you actually believe this is all your fault. So it's trying to actually understand, you know, exactly what happened and unravel, because in your minds, I know, as particularly for me, I went through a long stage of believing this was all my fault, and I'd get to a point where I'd built myself up and then I'd fall back down again emotionally, going, oh, but if only I'd done, because this person had put themselves in such a powerful place and I'd allowed them to do it. You know, I over a period of time, I'd allowed them to do it. So it's, for me, it's about me taking responsibility for the role that I played in that relationship, but also realizing, yeah, it wasn't all my fault and that it was manufactured. So it was a manufactured relationship. And in a way, it's really sad, because the abuser is a really a hollow person, and they're looking to fill themselves up with other people, other people's energy, other people's whatever they need, and they target people specifically for that validation.
Yeah, they do, exactly. And something you mentioned, which can be incredibly difficult to kind of understand a bit, I think, is you talked about the role that we play in a relationship. And I think I think we talked about this a little bit on the other podcast. Let's go down that road a little bit more, because I think, you know, when you talk about the role that we played, if we're not careful on how we interpret that, we can immediately go down to, it is all my fault, right?
It is all my fault. So during that relationship, you would have seen, their mask drop and actually seen the person behind that mask, because they're playing a role. This is, you know, and the Oscar goes to, because they do, they right at the very beginning in the love bombing stage, they listen to absolutely everybody. Sorry, they listen to absolutely everything you say, and they mirror that, you know, that they understand what you're looking for in a relationship, in a person, you know, in your life, and they create a character that is going to play out that role. When I'm talking about there's a few elements to this when I talk about taking responsibility, because I actually saw red flags in my relationships. And I also saw, and I know I'm intuitive, and I know I see slightly, you know, things slightly differently, but I saw the red flags. I saw how other people were treated, but my belief and what I'd been told was, you know, that I was absolutely amazing and whatever, you know, high up on this pedestal. And I believed that he's never going to do that to me. I saw. So taking responsibility is actually saying, this person doesn't treat people particularly well in certain areas of their life, or if, you know, and noticing those sort of things. But the other responsibility is, so I saw the red flags and I did nothing, or when I questioned it, I believed them. And also I had a three strike rule. And third one and you're out. And I got to the third one and I believed them. I believed what they were saying. So I take responsibility, because I was there and I was ending a relationship because it wasn't suiting. It didn't work for me. They were crushing my boundaries and walking all over me. And I was told, you know, and I believe what I was told. So I take responsibility for that. I also, when I talk about, you know, that's really what I'm talking about when I'm talking about responsibility, but there will be an element that this mirrors something. And I believe a lot of stuff comes from childhood. So if we witness not healthy relationships or we're treated in a certain way, then we may not have strong boundaries. And a lot of the work I do is around that area. So taking the emotion that people are feeling and the pain that they're feeling, and then tracking it back to where it first came up, and doing the healing right the way through. So responsibility is when I talk about responsibility is you did see something that you maybe believed or whatever, and it's sticking to, no, this isn't right. And I should have stuck with my gut feeling.
Yeah, that is, I think that's the real key in that, you know, taking our understanding the role that we played in it, or, you know, understanding our part in a relationship and kind of analyzing that, not for the reason of shaming ourselves and beating ourselves up. And, oh my God, you know, why didn't I see this? And why did I forget about that? And, you know, why did I let that slide and all that? But more of a, especially when the relationship is over, and then you can look back and be like, man, you know, like all these things were there. This is what I can use to help myself in the future, not as a reason to beat myself up now. Right.
Yeah. That's kind of a real good thing. A shaming gate, you know, guilt tripping thing. This is using, you know, taking responsibility. There were two people in this relationship. Okay. One of them was fake, but there were two people in the relationship, and this is about taking responsibility and ownership of me and my feelings and my emotions and my boundaries, everything. And if anything, making me stronger, coming out of it, making me stronger. So I always, when the relationship was breaking down, you know, and I was cracking up, I thanked him and said, you know, you've broken me open. And I thank you for that. You know, you've given me this tool to heal myself on a level that I've never been able to experience before.
Yeah, it allows you to get to know yourself on a whole nother level.
Yeah.
And, you know, you learn so much about yourself, and then you learn how strong you can be, and you learn abilities that you didn't realize you had, you know, and then you take it even a step further, and you're helping other people who haven't been able to find a way to recover and, you know, to come out of these emotional relationships. So you're now being of service to others, one of the best gifts you could give to humanity. Like what, like it's an A to Z book. So let's have a little fun. Like what would be something that you would have underneath like the T?
Let me just quickly, P would be pathological lying.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yes. Yes, that's a big, huge emotional, that's something emotional abusers use all the time. Yes, yeah. It's a very common one. I like that.
What about M?
Sorry, M?
M.
Yeah, let's go for M. What have we got for M? It's got to be, manipulation.
Oh, yeah.
But I would also have things like manufactured soulmate, manufactured and that, you know, because it is a manufactured relationship and it wasn't real. And I think that's part of the pain coming out of it, is that realizing, you know, one of the big questions is for me was, oh my God, did he actually love me? You know, that was a big one for me.
So manufactured soulmate. I personally even haven't heard that phrase before. So I'm very intrigued. Can you explain what that is a little bit?
Yeah, so in part of the love bombing stage or the idealization stage, the first stage of the relationship, they listen to absolutely everything. So they know, you know, they know, you know, as much as they can know about your hopes and your dreams and your desires, and they manufacture a character. And then, you know, some of the things they'll say is, but we're soulmates, we're supposed to be together, because they'll come up with, you know, scenarios or things they've done and this is one of my guts things that I know, you know, I was training as a spiritual life coach. I was one of the sessions we were discussing various different things, and one of the things came up was that writing a letter to the universe to meet a soulmate. And so I went home and I thought about all the things that I'd like in a soulmate, and really early on in the relationship, and I know I didn't want to do it, I ended up sharing this letter, and I was told that he'd done exactly the same thing. He'd written this letter out to the universe, and he, and I turned up within weeks of him doing it. So whether that was true or not, I really don't know. But I shared what I wanted and what I was looking for in a person. So they automatically, but this is one of the statements that, you know, we're soulmates. So they manufacture the relationship to become a manufactured soulmate. So they're persuading you that this relationship is on a soul level meant to be.
Yeah, let's go down that road a little bit more yet. And it's very interesting because I never heard of the term manufactured soulmate either, but it's kind of fascinating. And you mentioned about how they, meaning the other person or the toxic person, will manufacture something. And I also wonder, too, how much of this plays into us portraying what we want to see in someone, even if it's not there. Like, do you know where I'm going with this at all?
You know, that is such a brilliant question, because I actually, I've written an article. I wrote three articles last summer. One was called Idealization. One was called Discard. And Devaluation. The third was Discard. I did a video on it, and I did something else. I can't remember now. But in the Idealization article, I question whether we're falling in love with ourselves. Narcissist is this character that looks into the pool and sees himself and falls in love with himself because there's was there a curse put on him? I can't remember now. But he falls in love with himself. And I wondered whether some of this was being mirrored back. And my question was, are we actually falling in love with ourselves? Because you're saying what you're looking for, and also they're taking all the qualities they like about you, and they're pretending they're their own. And I've loads of stuff I've seen and heard and read and whatever is that some of these people, you know, that they've got no creativity. They steal other people's ideas. They steal people's identities. So basically, maybe I'll put identity theft in there. You know, I love that, because I do wonder whether we fall in love with an element of ourselves, and but we can't see it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fascinating because it's like, I mean, you can see it as falling in love with an element of yourself. You can see it as this is some kind of storybook, white knight, shining armor, ideal person. And, you know, depending on, I mean, a multitude of factors and, you know, your state of mind and your vulnerability and all kinds of stuff, we can easily see stuff that just isn't there. And we are so, and I mean, and this gets into a really different aspect of it, but we can go down this road of trying to make that person into what we want to be and rationalizing things they do to try and fit that mold just so we can have that soulmate. And then, you know, lo and behold, oh my God, I met my soulmate. When in reality, this can potentially be a completely toxic person who is using everything against you and just running along with it.
I mean, you summed it up perfectly, because that's exactly what happens. And if you put this in with the trauma bonding, so the trauma bonding is when we're releasing these hormones, and we release them. So the mother releases them at birth, and I think it's at 4 months as well of the pregnancy. But as she's going into birth to give birth, one of the hormones is oxytocin, which is a bonding hormone, and they create these scenarios where this oxytocin, it happens in all relationships at the beginning of a relationship, and you know it happens, you know, during relationships as well. You know, when you're falling, things happen, and you might fall a little bit deeper in love with someone. But with these relationships, because of the cycle that's going on, this oxytocin hit is happening a lot. So it's this bonding. And this is where they're able to put themselves in the place of caregiver and take over that role of caregiver, because they're abusing you, and you then turn to them to the abuser because your safety is being threatened. We look at our parents and the caregivers around us to protect us, and so we're going, the person is abusing us, but we're also turning to them to protect us because we're being abused. So it's really, really, really messed up.
Yeah, and so many people fall into these patterns. I know in my own practice, and even in my own, you know, personal past, you can recognize how a person falls into these patterns. You know, the soulmate, it's like a big trendy thing right now. So, you know, I can clearly see how so many people can fall into that. This is my soulmate, you know, and then, you know, they don't realize it's a manufactured type situation. you know, and then they feel obligated to fulfill this relationship because they're their soulmate. It's a very dangerous cycle, and it's extremely challenging to get out of. What would you recommend to our listeners to help them recognize that they're in this type of pattern?
There's so many things going on when you're in that relationship that you have to be in a place that you want to get out, or your safety is threatened and you know you've got to get out. On average, I believe it's about seven, you'll go back 7 to 8 times on average into that sort of relationship, because they've got so many ways of hooking you back in. I work with a lot of people that have come out of relationships and are really confused. In a relationship, I would say the only thing you can do if you know somebody in a relationship is just be there and tell them that you're there and let them know unconditionally that you're there. You don't necessarily know you're in the relationship, in a toxic relationship, an abusive relationship. Physical abuse is completely different to emotional abuse, and I've experienced both in relationships. And I'm actually going to say the emotional abuse was worse than the physical. I knew I was being hit, and I knew it wasn't right. The emotional abuse is done so insidiously that you wake up one day and find yourself trapped, or that this has happened to you. And it's usually when you've come out of the relationship that you realize that stuff was going on that wasn't right. So they also are able to put themselves when they're putting themselves in this when they're trauma bonding and putting themselves in this place of being the caregiver. They are testing you. So in this cycle of abuse, between the idealization and devaluation, in the devaluation stage, you find that the things they found amazing about you at the beginning of the relationship, they start to turn against you, and they do it more towards the devaluation. They test you. And what they're doing is they're trying to, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, I don't know. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to get you to a point where you're more committed to the relationship and protecting the relationship than you are to protecting yourself. I've written a little bit about coercive control, and that I hadn't recorded in my on my YouTube stuff. It came up recently with a court case in the UK where a woman has been released from prison. She is waiting to find out whether she needs to be retrialed. But at the time of her being put in prison, there wasn't a coercive control in the UK. I don't know whether there is one in the States. But coercive control is manufacturing and manipulating people to do things that they wouldn't normally do through fear. And, you know, whatever else, you know, lots of different emotions going on. But a lot of it is fear. I've written about in the book, I've already got sexual coercion. So that's where they might use triangulation, or they might bring in a third party into a relationship because they get their sexual needs met by this person. And then you might do something that you're not comfortable with, or you didn't want to do, because that's the only way you can keep your relationship secure, because you've been brainwashed. You've been put in this position that this relationship is more important than your own safety.
You've shared so much incredible information, Liz, and I know the time is running out here, but I think one thing we can all take away from this, kind of like an underlying message, is when you are in this type of an emotional abuse relationship, you many oftentimes, and probably more often than not, have no idea it's even happening. Right. You know, as you mentioned, until either somebody points it out to you or until it's over, and then you look back and be like, wow, like that was just, you know, over the top in so many ways. And being able to see and learn from the experience to be able to help yourself in the future, surrounding yourself with people who can give you that kind of perspective and not use it against you, I think is a big part of it. And, you know, I think it's important. Like, you know, as you mentioned, in a physically abusive relationship, obviously there's things that are more blatant, but emotional is so covert and manipulative that you just don't even know it's there until you're stuck in the middle of it.
Yeah. I think it's when you've come out of it and it's that questioning what the hell happened, you know, mm-hmm. or what happened to me, and why do I, you know, feel like this, or whatever it is, not understanding. It's that really not understanding what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been awesome, Liz. And I think we have uncovered enough to probably bring you back again in the future, because we seem to be on a theme here of just diving into more things. And I'm like, wow, you know, yeah, let's talk about this. And oh, wait, what about that? So I will definitely keep in touch with you on that. But before we go for this episode, if you want to share more about your website and your work and your upcoming book and your previous book and all that stuff, that would be great.
Okay. As I said at the beginning, I'm a soul transformation therapist, a core issue therapist, a Reiki master teacher, soul plan reader. I work with women coming out of emotionally abusive relationships. I'm gone away from the narcissist, the psychopath, the sociopath, and the psychopath, because we're all on the spectrum. And it's just some people are more way over, and the abuse, there were so many different types. So I just go along the line of emotional abuse and toxic relationships. They're really painful. And this is my biggest thing. I remember sitting on the sofa in October, whenever it was, 2016, I think it was, saying, I never, ever want anybody to experience what I've experienced. I never want them to experience that. And I think that's the passion behind everything. I still had a journey to go with my healing. But I'm lucky that I work in the industry that I work in, with the life coaching. That's, you know, I had all that behind me. So I had these tools, and I had some amazing friends that held space. And that's what I want to create for people, is to hold a space for them to do that healing, to help them understand what happened, and to get over it, and to release the trauma from the body, because we hold this emotional trauma within us, and this is where illnesses come from. And so it's about helping them release that trauma. So I've written Finding Lily, which it was published in 2017, and it's just a story of a situation that happened over a few weeks. And it's just the emotions that come up and the questioning. And what I hadn't realized was that was probably my stepping stone for launching into this area. I had no idea that was going to happen. It just came out of me. And this is just, it was a project that somebody said to me, please put this together. And my publishers have put out some stuff, and I've put some stuff out, and I just keep coming back to me saying, I can't wait to get hold of this. I can't wait to get hold of it. So maybe I didn't realize there was such a need, but I'm working on it. I hope it won't be too long before it is published.
Excellent. We can't wait for when it is published, and I'm sure it's going to meet probably a bigger need than you can ever imagine. So we can definitely cover that next time. But thanks again, Liz. This has been amazing as always. We appreciate you coming on the show again.
Thank you both. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Beyond Your Past, part of the Mental Health News Radio Network. Information shared on this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should supersede the direction of a medical doctor or any mental health professional. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting app and leave us a review. We would sure appreciate it. Also, please consider sharing this episode with someone who may find it helpful. If you would like more information on working with Matt as your coach, just head over to beyondyourpast.com and schedule your free one-hour chat. If you'd like to learn more about working with Joanne as your coach, please check out joannesuppressi.com and contact her for more information. We're always on the lookout for new guests. If you're interested in joining us on an upcoming episode, just head over to beyondyourpastradio.com and contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you soon.